Something ain't clean in the milk.
Straight up evil.
Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily
thou
fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
everybody's had a dog fish a tampon out of the garbage. It ain't right
to Bible you, but you can pretend like you were a dog.
Wow.
Pennsylvania, and we're going
Commonwealth.
What's happening?
Suspicious rich people
who don't know what happens to people. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hi.
Tonight, we are talking about the infuriating case of Ellen Greenberg. Quinnies? This case was brought to our attention about a month ago by one of our fans on Instagram, and I can't remember her name or her Instagram handle, and I can't find her. If you're listening and you're the person who tagged us on, I believe it was an article about Ellen's story. Thank you. The story needs as much attention as possible. Mm-hmm. Truly appreciate it. I had never heard of Ellen Greenberg before that.
Nope.
So I know Crime Junkie recently covered Ellen's case. Big shout out to Ashley and Britt. Generation Y has great coverage. It just so happened that we're covering it at almost the same time, which from our perspective is great because the more people talking about this, the better.
Totally.
People need to know what happened here. Ellen Ray Greenberg was a 27-year-old first grade teacher who was found dead in her Philadelphia apartment on Wednesday, January 26th of 2011. Ellen died as a result of 20 stab wounds, but the scene was treated as a suicide. There are several twists and turns to this story, but it's important. Okay. It's important to remember right up top.
I'm already
right at the beginning. Can no matter what happens in the next hour or so, do not forget the woman died of 20 stab wounds and it was treated as a suicide. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Quinny. How many stab wounds, Quinny? One more time.
20 of them. 20.
So 20. Okay.
20. So 20. Okay.
When you're looking at Ellen's case, it's impossible not to think about Maitrice Richardson, Sherry Rasmussen, Lavina Johnson, Vanessa Guillen, Jessica Easterly, and all the countless women victims that we have covered on the show who have not received proper investigative treatment. We respect law enforcement on the show. We appreciate the people who sacrifice their lives to serve and protect when they actually do that. But this case is a glaring example of incompetence, and there's just no way around it. You can't change my mind.
Nope.
So Ellen Ray Greenberg, born on June 23rd of 1983, child of Josh and Sandy Greenberg. So from a young age, Ellen was very interested in English. She loved speaking and speech. She loved to read. Carly, another one.
See?
Carly's
book club. We better watch
it. Another one of them readers.
Not doing so hot.
No, a lot of the readers are ending up in a bad situation, Carly. You better be careful. Okay. She got a communications degree from Temple University, and she wanted to pursue speech pathology just like Jessica Easterly. She thought it would be her best bet to get her teaching credentials. So she actually worked and went to school at night to get her teaching credential from Temple before she was hired at Juanita Park Academy as a first grade teacher. So
She was a boss.
Very, very capable person. Shortly before her death, Ellen told her parents that she was struggling with anxiety and feeling unsure of herself. Happens to the best of us. She was 27 years old.
All of us.
So she wanted to come home to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where her parents lived, and she was living in Philadelphia at the time. She kept saying that she wasn't happy at work, and she kind of attached all of her bad feelings or anxieties to work. Like, I feel like I'm under pressure at work. This is what she's telling her parents. And her parents are like, well, maybe before you move back home, maybe you should see someone about your anxiety, maybe a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And she ends up seeing a psychiatrist. So that at the time that she died, she was under a psychiatrist's care, which is not typical of a lot of the victims that we see. So that kind of gives you a unique window into what she was really going through at the time. Her psychiatrist maintains that Ellen never made any attempts on her life, never talked about suicide. There comes a point where her medical records are subpoenaed and a lot comes out about her mental health, which is which is really unfortunate and another source of like rage.
The psychiatrist was like, anytime that she was down or stressed, like she worried about other people, like she wasn't worried about herself. That's like one of the things that the she was always thinking about other people and how it was going to affect them.
Right. Yeah. She seemed like a very kind, considerate person by all accounts. Sure. And we don't have a lot of information on Ellen, the person. We have a lot more information on Ellen, the victim, which is really unfortunate.
Annoying as hell. It
sucks. And I hope that we'll learn more about her as things kind of unfold and the way that the ball is rolling now. So she was a first grade teacher, like we said, and after her death, obviously a new teacher took over her class and just raves about how seamlessly in place everything was. She had lesson plans. She had grades completed. She had plans for the rest of the year. She had a journal outlining field trips that she wanted to take the kids on. She had the classroom organized. I mean, this next teacher walked in like Ellen set it up perfectly, which kind of comes back to haunt her later, but I think really speaks more to her character. Let's back up a little bit to 2007. Ellen goes on a blind date and she meets Sam Goldberg. Now, Ellen's future husband's name in this episode is Sam. And my husband's name is also Sam. So It's not great. They met on a blind date in 2007. And Sam was and still is a TV producer for the Golf Channel, NBC Sports, Comedy Central. He's a fairly successful producer. He holds a broadcasting degree from Temple. They hit it off and they are dating. And after a couple of years, they move in together into the Venice Lofts condominium building, which we will talk a lot about. Sam proposed to Ellen in June of 2010. And they were set to be married in August of 2011.
He's not even attractive enough for her or anything. She's way too beautiful for him. Like, I'm not saying he's like a hideous person or something, but I just feel like he was not on her level.
It is. It's one of those things where you look at them and you go, I wonder like what the connection is there.
It's like Lacey and Scott Peterson.
Yes. He's definitely takes care of himself, looks like he cares about his appearance, but she is just so radiant.
Yeah.
That you're just like is he really funny or like, what, like, what
exactly? Exactly. Like, what is it?
And at this time, everyone says Ellen's head over heels in love with this man. They're happy. Relationship's good. Ellen sent out the save the dates for her August 2011 wedding 4 days prior to her death.
Jeez.
She had her dress. So that makes it just so much more unlikely to me.
Yes.
Exactly.
And we're going to talk about this again and again. People do stuff spur of the moment all the time.
Sure.
And it's true. It happens. People make a huge life change and then commit suicide. And it doesn't seem to make any sense. So we are up to January 26th of 2011. There's a huge blizzard in Philadelphia that day. Public schools were dismissed at 12 p.m. so everyone could get home. So that includes Ellen, and her first grade class was dismissed. Everybody comes and picks up the kids, and Ellen heads back to her apartment that she shares with her fiance, Sam Goldberg. Now, this is the Venice Lofts. This is a luxury condo building. I looked at a couple facts and figures about Sam Goldberg and some of the properties that he now owns. And he was making a lot of money, I'm sure. A lot.
Yes. And they're also living in a very wealthy, wealthy part of Pennsylvania.
There's tight security. There are cameras. There are key fobs to get in and out. There's security personnel manning a desk at the front at all times. And they lived on the sixth floor. So you would assume that this is a very safe place to live. A lot of amenities. So Ellen gets sent home early because of the snowstorm that's coming. And this puts Ellen at home at a time when she normally would not have been, just like Sherry Rasmussen.
Yes.
And that's a very, that's such a key point too, Quinny. That is a really key point that you make there.
She never would have been there. It's doubtful she would have been there even as time progressed, because it was a Wednesday. And so she would get out of class. She had a pretty considerable commute to get back. And depending on traffic, this whole window puts her at home the whole time when she wouldn't have been. She's not supposed to be there. How many stories have we covered where someone is not supposed to be somewhere and this happens?
Definitely more often than not, I feel like.
So she's home. Sam says that he saw Ellen around 4:45 p.m. when he left to go work out. So you remember I was talking to you about those awesome amenities. They have a gym in their building, which I am just so jealous of. It's so cool. And so Sam's going to take advantage of that. And he goes to work out right in the building. So he never really truly leaves. He's gone for about half hour. He comes back to their sixth floor apartment and expects the door to be unlocked again because Ellen's home, but it is bar locked from the inside. So this doesn't make any sense to Sam. So he calls and texts Ellen, but she doesn't respond, even though she's at home. So because he has no key, he had to force the door open. So at 6:30 p.m., we get a 911 call from Sam. I have listened to this call a lot. A lot of times. He does initially begin to panic, and he's told by the 911 operator that he needs to calm down. And he does, almost to a shocking degree. Like, he seems very calm after that.
It's a light switch.
He communicates what's going on very clearly, more clearly than we hear on most 911 calls. He is obviously panicking in the beginning of the call. He's told to calm down, and then that panic doesn't come back.
I'm sorry, he is obviously acting like he's panicking in the beginning. I'm sorry.
Possible. I'm sorry. Possible.
The 911 call to me is just like the key.
It's rough.
Of all of ugh.
God, it's rough. It does not do him any favors.
No.
He tells 911 that he is just downstairs at the gym, just like we said, couldn't get the door open. He had to bust the door open, and he found his fiance Ellen laying on her back, and there's blood all around her. So once he gets transferred kind of in the middle of the 911 call to the fire department so that they can walk him through doing CPR, because at this point we really don't know what's going on. She's on the ground. He's scared enough to have called 911, and there's a lot of blood. So the fire department is on the phone with him, instructing him to do CPR. They're like, you need to try to do CPR on her. Have you tried to do CPR on her? Can you try to do CPR on her? And he says, quote, I guess I have to, right?
I literally can't.
Having been in the presence of dead bodies before, I feel like of course you are freaked out to be around them. It's unnatural.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
There really isn't a way around like having that sound in your voice. Like, honestly, like you can't even really hide that.
I try to think that like he doesn't want to touch her because he's freaked out, but that also doesn't make any sense either, because by his own admission, he doesn't know what's wrong with her.
Right.
So why wouldn't, like, you just imagine if someone that you love is hurt, you'd be trying to figure out what the fuck is going on.
You would think that.
So he tries to rip her shirt off, because in order to do the chest compressions, they want it on her bare skin. The 911 operator says, pull her shirt off. He can't, he says, because there's a zipper in the front. So he can't pull it. He's having some trouble with it. And then he says, quote, oh my God, she stabbed herself. She fell on a knife. Oh no, her knife is sticking out. There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
And he says it just like that.
Those words, exactly. Can you seriously repeat that, Quinny? Can you literally repeat those words, please?
Oh my God, she stabbed herself. She fell on a knife. Oh no, her knife is sticking out. There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Blame, blame, blame.
Not a normal leap.
No.
No.
I don't feel like. It's no. just, and again, it we isn't. Say this all the time. Everybody deals with this shit differently. We have to, like, we remember that we're not trying. It's just, there's
but
a
if
line.
She has a, there is a line. And if she has a knife sticking out of her, how did you not notice that? You would have seen that. It would have been just like you said, like if it was somebody you loved, you would go to them and you would examine them and you would look at them. So
figure
you would
out exactly
already know
what is going on. Yes.
Where is the blood coming from? Whatever. Exactly.
Like,
oh,
how big of a knife is it that it can be 4 inches into her chest? And there is no way to know prior to. Come hell on.
No.
Also, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that she stabbed herself repeatedly, then stabbed herself in the heart, then zipped up her jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure it's a Lavina Johnson all over the place.
The call reminds me at first in tone, I'm gonna be honest, first impression of the Michael Peterson 911 call from the staircase.
Yeah.
That's it's what it so at first. When he's panicking, that's what it reminds me of. And then also Martin McNeil. Okay, listen, right. I'm a freak. We're freaks here at Straight Up Evil. We listen to a lot of fucking 911 calls.
We do.
We hear a lot of people on the worst day of their life. Okay.
It's not great.
You start to understand what these things sound like. Yeah. The similarities are there. Go listen to that Michael Peterson 911 call and then listen to Sam Goldberg. Finally, emergency personnel arrive there and they're there fast. They get there fast and they find Ellen in the kitchen. So Ellen is not laying on her back. She is sitting against the kitchen cabinets on the floor. She's propped up. She is fully dressed. She has a towel in her left hand and her eyeglasses are on the ground next to her. And she has a knife sticking out of her chest.
Isn't the towel clean too? Like a clean towel, a clean white towel.
It's a kitchen towel. Yeah. It's clear from the beginning that there's no life-saving techniques that can be done to help Ellen. She is already dead. And she was pronounced dead at 6:40 following a 6:30 911 call. They were there quick. So we start to see crime scene techs begin investigating and they find tons of blood on and around Ellen. Ellen has blood all over her neck, her head, her hands, the tops of her boots, and on only the sole of her right boot, not on her left boot, which reminds me a lot of Nicole Brown. This whole thing, honestly, reminds me of that crime scene. So it appears that Ellen or someone had been doing some food prep because there are blueberries in a colander on the counter and there's a knife block that is right next to the sink and it's tipped over on its side and two knives have fallen out of it. No blood on either of those two knives. And there's a couple small drops of blood on the counter. Other than that, the blood is all around Ellen and on Ellen and under Ellen. Absolutely no signs of struggle. Absolutely no valuables stolen from the apartment. Like we said, this is a luxury condo. This would have been the place to steal from. Nothing stolen. The door latch had been forced open. But again, Sam said that he did that just to get into the apartment. They find some of Ellen's medications. She, at the time, was on Xanax, Klonopin, and Ambien. She had prescriptions for all three. And Sam is there at the scene, obviously, and they're talking to him. He relays his story, right? Went to the gym, couldn't get back in the apartment, called Ellen, texted Ellen, didn't answer, decided to break down the door, called 911. So they take all this down, and they find Ellen's phone in the apartment to verify if this actually happened. And yes, there are 9 texts from Sam to Ellen, starting at 5:30, and they're fired off in quick succession.
And they're also weird.
Yeah, I don't like them at
all. I don't appreciate them at all. I would not call it kind communication. Okay, so number one, hello. Number two, open the door. Number three, what are you doing? Number four, I'm getting pissed. Number five, hello. Number six, you better have an excuse. Number seven, what the fuck? Number eight, number nine, you have no idea. I'm just going to ask you, Quinnies, okay? If you locked your significant other out of the house and you were in the house and say it was an honest mistake, you're in the shower, whatever, and they're trying to get in. If you open your phone, I was born in the 80s. If you look at your iPhone that automatically knows when you're looking at it, if you look at your iPhone and see all 9 of those, are you like ever talking to them again?
I'm leaving the door locked. Yeah. The door will remain locked.
Keep your ass outside
for an extra 10 minutes until you cool down and think about what the fuck you just said to me.
I'm also blocking your number.
Especially too, because like, it's one thing to like be having a bad day and have a tone in your text with your significant other. We all do. Like, okay, honey. But that, you're very much getting a taste of the exchanges that happen day to day between the two of them.
Yeah, that is disrespectful. Also, take your fucking keys with you, buddy.
I mean,
yeah.
So
also, he only went to the gym for like half an hour. So like
way to go, really bud.
I know. I'm kind of like, I was trying to think. I'm like, damn. I'm like, if I go if I don't have a lot of time, I was thinking about, I'm like, if I don't have a lot of time, I'll do like a 30 minute run, but you're still at the gym for 45 minutes. In order to be at the gym for half hour, you're probably working out for like 15 minutes.
20 minutes.
Yeah. The fuck are you doing?
What's
you could just do that. If you could probably do whatever you just did in your living room. Those texts, regardless of how much we don't like them, they were sent. They have now verified a lot of what he has said. There's evidence to suggest that what he is saying is true. So like we said, the building at this point has security guards. They're using key cards to get into the building. The neighbors have heard absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. And at this point, there's been no autopsy. There's no suicide note. Ellen had a journal. We do not know what it said. At this point, at 8:30 p.m., the Philadelphia Police Department rules the scene a suicide. No autopsy yet. But based on the fact that Ellen was seemingly alone, the door was locked from the inside, neighbors heard nothing and nothing was stolen, they ruled it a suicide.
Ridiculous. Nope. No. No.
The thing is, once you call it a suicide, it's no longer a crime scene. And that is extremely dangerous.
It is.
Extremely dangerous.
And that's exactly what happened in this particular case as well. Things did not get searched or properly treated as a crime scene. We're done here. Our job here is done. Pull the yellow tape down.
Take that tape down. We got it. We don't need it. This is all good.
Pull that tape down.
They rule the scene a suicide and they take Sam to the police station for a formal interview, which surprised me.
Yeah.
To be honest, because
it's the least they could do.
He was questioned. He had a criminal defense attorney with him during the questioning. Do not blame him for this. Always, 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 always bring your attorney. If you even if you have nothing to hide, we have seen too many times on this show where someone talks to the police and it is completely, their words are twisted and that's it. That night, while Sam was at the police station, while this is going on, Sam's father contacts Josh and Sandy Greenberg to tell them what's happened to Ellen. The blizzard was so bad that night that they can't even come to Philadelphia. They had to stay in Harrisburg, which is so horrible.
Horrible.
Unbelievably horrible. Because the first thing you want to do is get in the car and go find out what the hell.
Of course.
What actually happened. You need to be there physically. And the following morning, they speak to investigators, talk to them on the phone, and they want to know if they've, you know, obviously they're giving them their condolences and they're saying, when's the last time you talked to her, and trying to get any information they can. So Sandy said that the last time she talked to Ellen was 7 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, on the previous day. While she was on her way to work, she called her mom on her morning commute. They chatted, nothing, absolutely nothing out of the ordinary. Ellen seemed normal. They really don't glean very much from her parents. So that day, the first autopsy on Ellen's body was done 9 o'clock in the morning by Dr. Marlon Osborne. Double dealing, two timing son of a
trifling asshole.
Skeeving ass, two-faced. So the first autopsy, Ellen has multiple stab wounds to her chest. We know that already from how the body was presented at the scene. In addition to that, Ellen has 10 stab wounds on the back of her neck. She has a stab wound in her abdomen, and she has a large wound on the back of her head. She has a stab wound specifically to the membrane that surrounds her spinal cord, and the medical examiner is unable to tell if this actually damaged her spine. I guess there's limited neurological testing that you can do postmortem, but if it did, it would suggest that Ellen would not have physically been able to continue stabbing herself after that stab wound.
Such as in the heart where the knife was left.
Right.
Okay.
Which was the fatal blow. So not all the wounds are deep. In fact, some of them are very shallow. And the fatal wound, like we said, was to her chest from a knife that was still embedded in her chest. Okay. So when she's found, the knife is inside of her chest. So the initial autopsy describes the wounds as having smooth edges, but this is a serrated knife. So she had 19 total stab wounds technically. So I know she had been stabbed 20 times, but she had 19 stab wounds and that huge wound in the back of her head. They don't classify it specifically as something that's been done with a knife, or if it's been done with a knife, there's additional damage. It's very hard to tell. Almost like diminishes it to call it a stab wound because it's larger. Huge wound on her head. She also is covered in severe bruising on her neck, her arms, her legs, her abdomen, and the bruises are all at different stages. So some are fresh, some are old. And so that suggests them coming in steadily for a period of time.
100%.
So they can't figure out if her spinal cord was damaged or not. And so they have the spinal cord looked at by a neuropathologist named Dr. Lucy Rourke Adams. She found no damage to the spinal cord that would suggest that Ellen would have been essentially paralyzed. They can't conclusively say that she didn't lose motor function, but she may have lost feeling in her body. So eventually she wasn't feeling the stabbing anymore after that wound. It's possible. We don't truly know. The medical examiner decides to rule Ellen's cause of death as a homicide. Wait a minute.
Quiz. Wait, stop.
Now they're ruling this a homicide. So, okay, I just want to, let's just put this into perspective.
Now? Yeah, just
less than 24 hours after the woman was found deceased, Ellen's case has been investigated as a suicide and ruled a homicide. I'm just going to continue to go back to it because honestly, no matter what else has happened in this case, they should be sued for that.
Absolutely.
Period. It is irresponsible to victims, to the victim's family. It's so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's totally fine, right? Quinnies, no big deal. They got it wrong at first. Now they got it right. So we'll just take the medical examiner's determination and go back and investigate this like a homicide, right?
Nope.
You would hope.
Same day as all of this is going on, an unnamed relative of Sam's calls the property manager at the condo building and asks to get access to the apartment to get some things for the funeral. They want pictures of Ellen. They want to get Sam's suit, all of these things. So the property manager pretty astutely called the police and was like, can I let people back in there? And the police said, sure, it's not a crime scene. So go for it. And
this
the property
Vallow shit.
Wow. It's so sketch.
It is, Carly. It's exactly like freaking Lori Vallow going in and taking all of Charles's.
Yeah.
So the property manager admits after the fact in deposition testimony, she was shocked that the cops told her that. She was like, what? I could just let people in there? Like, there's still blood everywhere. Do you maybe like want some of that blood that's there or some of the evidence? Like, do you maybe
finger dusting for some fingerprints?
Do you maybe like,
do you want to send like, it some to Carly? Anyway? Would you like to send it?
Do you
want to
like
Carly?
Send it to Carly or like what's going to happen here?
Okay.
The police said, no, it's not our responsibility to clean up crime scenes. And they gave the property manager the number of a company literally called Crime Scene Cleanup. And she used that service and they cleaned the entire fucking apartment. They're determining this a suicide at 8:30 at night. They got there at 6:40. We're talking about less than 2 hours of looking around and saying, oh, it looks like nothing to me. Better, you know.
But could the property manager have just refused to let them in anyway? I wonder. You know what I mean? Like, even though the police
said probably
yes,
could.
Yes.
But then you have well, he just needs his suit for the funeral and the parents just want, who knows what they said to her.
Right. To my second point. And I know like you want closure in some way, you want to be able to celebrate the person, but that seems really fucking quick to just already be full steam rolling ahead for the funeral and just like getting her in the ground.
She's Jewish.
Sorry.
And so it is their custom to bury the dead as soon as possible. She passed on Wednesday. She was buried Friday.
Gotcha. Okay.
As quick as they possibly could for religious reasons.
I will.
But I do hear you. This just happened.
Or like Facebook existed. Okay. Like just grab some photos on Facebook and call it a day. It's not the best, but it's better than nothing.
Honestly, not for nothing. Like there hasn't been an autopsy yet. Like we do not know how she died. We don't know. We have what you think the crime scene was, but I get the autopsy and the crime scene work together so that you can tell what happened to someone. Yeah, you only have 50% of that. So the crime scene cleanup comes and disinfects the whole apartment. And then the property manager allows Sam's family to come inside. Now, according to Ellen's mother, Sam's family took, among other things, Ellen's car keys, her purse, her engagement ring, her two laptops, and her phone.
No.
Something ain't clean at all.
Except for the crime scene. The crime scene.
For the crime scene. Oh, spotless. Right. The computers and the phone were given over to the police, by Sam's attorney. But like, what good are they now? You broke the chain of command, buddy. So who cares if you have the phone and you have the computer now? Because you literally handed it to the only person who had a tangible means to kill her. After all of this, the police hear from the medical examiner, and the medical examiner says, hey guys, I've ruled this a homicide. So they go back to the apartment after it has been completely disinfected and others have taken shit, and they investigate it. And while they're doing that, Ellen's funeral is being held at Bethel Temple in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I don't know. I saw these on a couple different blogs and a couple different websites that were more devoted to armchair investigating, so not substantiated, but there are reports from people who claim to have been there that Sam's family and Ellen's family did not get along throughout the service or the gathering after. It's not like they took that stuff out of the house and gave it to her mom and dad.
No. And right, they're not married yet. It is not her husband. No.
So they don't even have any.
I've been trying like hell to find out whose name the condo was in.
Yeah.
The day after her funeral, I just want to, again, return to the timeline, Quinnies. Okay. I feel like a preschool teacher. We're going to talk about the days of the week. Wednesday night, Ellen unfortunately and tragically dies. Wednesday night, the crime scene is abandoned. Thursday morning, it is disinfected and Sam's family goes in, takes some items. Then the death is ruled a homicide. Friday morning, Ellen is buried. Things are not good at the funeral from what we understand. Day after, an investigator from the Philadelphia Police Department thought it was a good time to tell the Philadelphia Inquirer that investigators had since found evidence that made Ellen's death look more like a suicide, and they were looking into her, quote, mental issues. Quinnies.
I want your name.
I want your job. I want
your date of birth.
Dare you? I could sit here for the dare rest of the show you. And just say, how dare you? Because dare just to I even please. Say that there, that you, an investigator who has absolutely no authority to talk about mental health or anyone's mental health, or has never been trained in mental health or doesn't understand mental health, or is absolutely no expert in the area, think it's a good idea to tell a major paper 72 hours after the woman's been dead that you're going to look into her mental issues. Cool.
Not even her mental health. Her mental issues.
Her mental issues.
Already negative connotations.
Right. Already established that she has problems. And also, I just want to say too, one more time, if I was going to kill myself too, by the way, my choice way would be to stab myself 20 times. I just wanted to let you guys know.
No,
okay. Let me tell you.
The two top choices are stabbing myself multiple times in the back, the neck, and the chest. But like, also, again, you could just pour acid on your vagina, like,
or burn yourself alive
and then get dressed while you're on fire.
I will never get over that for as long as I live.
No, it's outrageous.
Lavina, we're sorry. So sorry.
Yeah, Lavina, okay. Lavina,
Ellen,
Jessica,
so sorry.
Vanessa, they're all in the show notes for this episode. Seriously, yeah. All of them, to how people can donate or sign petitions or whatever, because this is not a new fucking story. So of course they subpoenaed her psychiatric medical records. Zero attempts ever on her life. She talked to her therapist openly about her relationship with Sam. The psychiatrist said that she seemed to genuinely love him. She denied any type of abuse from him. She said she truly was stressed about her job and she was not happy to be at her job. She had mounting anxiety and she felt like it was just getting worse and worse as time went on. She was having difficulty sleeping. So the psychiatrist put her on Xanax and Klonopin and Ambien, which were meant specifically for sleep, and she could use them interchangeably so as not to use one med more than the other and develop a dependency. So when toxicology came back, she had small trace amounts of Klonopin and Ambien in her system. So then there's a meeting. Bernice, did you guys get invited to the meeting? I didn't get invited to the meeting, but there was a meeting to reconcile the suicide versus homicide discrepancy in this case. Unfortunately, no one from Straight Up Evil was invited, but we know that two police officers, the medical examiner's Dr. Osborne and the chief medical examiner, Dr. Galino, Dr. Rourke Adams, who did the second spinal cord examination, and someone from the DA's office was there. We have absolutely no idea when this meeting happened. Dr. Osborne and Dr. Galeno have both been questioned since about this meeting, and they said they don't remember. And there is no documentation of the meeting whatsoever. Nobody took notes. Nobody reserved a room. We do know that Dr. Osborne goes on to say he never took part in a meeting like this where they were trying to dispute the manner of death of a victim. He said never took part in anything like that. He said the medical examiner says how the victim died, and that's how they died. There's no meeting with investigators to explain their ruling. You know, they use science and that's what they do. At this meeting, this is where we get the second story about what happened to Ellen the night that she died. So this time the investigators are saying, no, 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 this is what actually happened. Sam got a security guard from the condo building, went down to the main lobby, got a security guard when he was locked out, and the security guard went with him when he couldn't open the door. So this means that Sam had someone with him when he found Ellen. No mention of this on the 911 call. No hint of another person on the recorded call. No mention of it from Sam. Mm-hmm. And the police are using this to back up their suicide claim. They're saying he was accompanied by a third party who is completely unbiased to the situation. He said that, you know, it all matches up and the security guard was with him. And this bolsters the suicide claim. I don't understand if 15 people found her, how the condition of her body changes at all.
Exactly.
Right.
They're making all of these decisions based on
that
information that is not good
true.
Information. So it's after this meeting that in March 2011, Dr. Osborne changes his ruling and calls Ellen's death a suicide. It's a suicide now, Quinnies. So we can just wrap up this podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
We're all set. Thank you.
Do we do like a bounce back there? So we did like suicide, homicide, suicide. Is that where we are?
Okay. Yep. For those of you who are keeping score at home, we now have had one suicide determination by investigators, one homicide determination by a medical examiner, and another suicide determination by the same medical examiner.
Now.
Yep.
Score is 2-1 on the volleyball court.
If that hasn't already made you chuck your beverage across the room, Ellen's parents found out about that on the news. Right. So Ellen's parents just start doing their own investigation. They've never believed the story from the beginning. So they start talking to Ellen's friends and they find out that maybe things are not great with Sam. Maybe.
Oh, you think?
There are some red flags there. They described Ellen, who is very confident, self-assured woman. They described her talking about kind of needing permission from Sam to do some things. So they would ask her to go out and she'd be like, let me talk to Sam first. This one is tough, Quinnies, because on one hand, it's sort of just what you say in an adult relationship. Like you have a routine, certain things that you do each week, or at least my husband and I do. And if you're going to deviate from that, I try to at least ask him first, like, hey, if I'm going to go out to dinner with the Quinnies, I'm like, hey, can you feed the dogs on Wednesday night? Because or can you take care of this thing? Because I won't be there.
I've done it forever. And Michael would always be like, I don't care. Do whatever. Yeah, I'm just like making
just
you aware.
Decency.
I'm not
it's-
just. Yeah.
No, I feel like it's just common decency in a relationship. Like it's just
it
nice
is.
To
it's
do.
Just,
like
it's just a respectful thing to do.
Yeah.
But her friends feel like it was indicative of something more. And honestly, I feel like if her parents know her and if that doesn't sound right, then it's probably not right.
Yeah.
The fact that her one friend said every time that people would bring him up or like mention him, that she would like change the subject or not talk about it. Because when your best friend is like not telling you about their relationship all the time, I don't expect you, Quinnies, to tell me intimate fucking moments of your relationship, but like exactly like we know things.
Can
about-
you imagine? Quinny, I had a really intimate moment like, today. I just wanted to tell you.
We still know about each other's people who we're with. Yeah. Oh, how's your person? Well, they're this or whatever. So I think that's a trend. Like psychiatrist says, no, she doesn't talk about him that much. Like she doesn't complain about him so much. It's really more the job.
She didn't want to even admit it to herself.
You're hiding something.
Yeah, this is classic abusive relationship right here.
It is.
It's classic. It's really classic.
But the fact of the matter is that she still was trying to move back home.
And we don't really know like what that meant for her and Sam.
Right.
But I think we also kind of do know what that meant for her and Sam. I think she was fucking going home.
Sorry, like that to me is that's done deal.
Also, Ellen's parents cannot understand why Sam's family took her purse and her car keys and her phone and her computers. Like, they gave the phone and the laptops to the police, but the Greenbergs didn't get Ellen's stuff back for months.
I would be enraged. I would be enraged.
This is Susan Powell.
And her parents don't live there. If they were taking it, like, to just make sure that it got, like, appropriately taken out of the house or whatever, why not just give it to them at the funeral when you see him in a day?
Now, his uncle's an attorney, right?
His uncle is an attorney.
See?
His uncle was an attorney and is now a judge. Yeah. So they do finally get her purse back, and they find a receipt from a gas station at 1:21 p.m. that day, the day that Ellen died. So why is she getting gas if she's planning on killing herself? And we know that people do this all the time. Spur of the moment decision. We know that it does happen in suicide, but it's just another thing. And at a certain point, there's too many of those things. Ellen's family obviously is not satisfied with the city of Philadelphia's medical examiner department. So they send all the documentation of her death to a pathologist named Dr. Cyril Wecht. In January of 2012, he releases his findings to the family. He said that the knife wounds that we talked about on Ellen's neck and back of the head were likely not done by her own hand because they are coming from multiple directions.
Think about it. If she's holding the knife in her hand with the handle and she's stabbing herself in the back of the head, the knife would be going in a different way, right? It would be going in with the blade side up, as opposed to if she was being stabbed from behind, the blade would be down. It's mind-blowing to me.
Well, because it never matched up to begin with, Quinny, because the knife that's in her chest is serrated and all of the wounds are smooth.
Exactly. Right.
So there's it never matched up to begin with. Right. It was never the right knife.
Obviously, she could stab herself that many times and then walk away and hide the knife really good so no one ever finds it, and then find a different knife to stab herself in the heart with.
Oh, that's the part that I'm not understanding. I get it now. Totally. Okay. Happens all the time. He also, and I love this, this might be my favorite finding of the whole case. He points out that people who commit suicide by stabbing themselves almost never stab themselves through their clothes. And when you think about that,
it's a very that makes sense. Tidbit.
If someone is going to kill themselves with a knife, why did you do it through your shirt? So Dr. Wecht says that the manner of death is strongly suspicious of homicide.
Oh, okay. So are we 2-2 now?
No, because his opinion isn't official.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So now that they know that they really have something, they hire a private investigator, they get attorneys, they file a public records request to get the full files on Ellen's case. Remember, her case is closed, so should be no problem, right? Better get them quick, not released. Will not release them to the family. They let them come to Philadelphia. Okay, so they live in Harrisburg. Let them come to Philadelphia Police Department only to tell them that they can look at the files, but they can't take any photos. They can't make any copies. What do you even do with that? Will you take notes on a notepad? Yeah, like, how do you even, that's really not even showing them.
Exactly.
Really. So this is where we start digging into the surveillance footage that the private investigator is digging up. Love this. From the condo building. Surveillance verifies that Sam did go to the gym at 5 o'clock and went back up to his sixth floor apartment at about 5:30, just like he said. We see Sam go downstairs after 5:30 because the door won't open, just like he said. And he gets help from security, just like he said. But the security guard doesn't go with him back upstairs.
He doesn't go up. Yeah, he doesn't go with him because it was against policy. They can't break the door.
The guard has since said that he never went upstairs. He could not go upstairs. It was against their policy to open the door for tenants. You don't do it.
So it verified that he did actually go down. Mm-hmm. But that's what's such a red flag about it, is that you didn't say that initially. And in fact, concierge says, oh yeah, but he was like kind of harassing me a little bit for it.
I can't think of a worse type of person than a TV producer. They're probably the worst, most brutal people on the planet.
Absolutely.
They're the type of people who tell you that you need to lose 5 pounds over the weekend before you're on air again.
Yeah. They that's want the producer. It. They want it their way, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm sure he was completely indignant. So we have this second story where he takes the security guard up. That gets the medical examiner to change its determination from suicide to homicide. Not true in any way. And everybody knows that it's not true because it's available on the surveillance tape and the testimony from the guard, but we're still just chilling. So now we get Dr. Wayne Ross gets added to the Greenbergs team. They're pulling out all the stops. This family, I am sure that they have used a significant amount of money to do this. Yeah. And it's not right. It's really not okay because this is the investigation that should have been done by the city of Philadelphia for a taxpaying citizen who died under suspicious circumstances. Exactly. This family has had to pick up the bill and I don't fucking appreciate it. And they should be compensated.
No, same. I'm right there with you, girl.
So we have Dr. Ross. He's actually able to get Ellen's spinal cord from the medical examiner who still had it. And he gets it for further examination. And he said in 2017 that her cranial cavity was punctured, which would have rendered her unconscious. This is the huge wound on the back of her head. At that point, she would have been unconscious. And we know that the fatal blow is supposedly through her chest. So she can't very well do that while she's unconscious.
Of course she can.
He also says that there is evidence of strangulation.
Yeah.
This is the first time that we're hearing this. The previous guy did not say this. And he was a pathologist as well. But there is a mark on the front of Ellen's neck that looks to him like a fingernail, and the bruising all over her body, including her neck, and the bruises on her neck are fresh. He calls the bruising on the rest of her body, quote, evidence of a repeated beating.
And we know she had the bruises all over too. So that just further proves that exactly it was happening over freaking time.
Okay. Now we got two pathologists, attorneys, we got a private investigator. Then we get a former homicide investigator, specializes in crime scene reconstruction. They got him working the case. This homicide investigator says that there's evidence that her body was moved after death. So remember, Sam said she was on her back. She wasn't on her back. She was found sitting up. Crime scene photos actually show that Ellen has blood on her face that is in a smeared pattern,
yeah.
And it goes back toward her right ear. She's sitting up. The blood is going down her face, mm-hmm, in a straight line that literally defies gravity.
Okay. Wow.
He also points out that since the computers were returned by Sam's family, police claim that they found search history on Ellen's computer that supports the suicide theory. And this is searches for painless suicide and suicide methods, all from the year leading up to her death. The family tries to get a copy of the pathologist report, Dr. Lucy Rourke Adams. She's the one who looked at the spinal injury after Dr. Osborne. They make the request for this and they're told repeatedly that they can't find it.
Yeah. Okay.
And by this point, the Philadelphia Inquirer is doing a lot of investigative reporting on Ellen's case because from the beginning, it's been weird as fuck and they haven't let it go. And kudos to them for that, yeah, because they're still writing stories about it. They went to Rourke Adams and straight up asked her, what was your determination and why? And she said that she has no memory of the case. And since there is no associated report and she doesn't have an invoice for her services, she's not sure that it ever even happened.
Now, what is your first thought about that?
That there's something in the water in Philadelphia and everyone's losing their fucking memory.
But do you think that, is there any possibility that it never actually happened? I don't necessarily think that, but is there any possibility?
This has been done very badly. They're having meetings without documentation and no paper trail. It could have been more like, let me ask you a question.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, was it an unofficial, like,
it had to have
like
been
a theoretical question.
Apparently everybody has amnesia in Philadelphia. It's a true problem. We're still moving ahead here. June 2019, Ellen's family attorney takes everything that they've gathered from the last 8 years, submits it to the police department and the medical examiner's office, and they ask, please change the manner of death and reopen this case. No response. Nope. So now we're done asking. Okay. We asked once.
Seriously.
Now we're done asking. So we're done being polite.
Like,
we're
go done. F- nope. GFY.
they are fucking suing the medical examiner's office and Dr. Osborne in specific. As of October 2019, they brought a civil suit. The city of Philadelphia responded to that suit by saying that the medical examiner can't be compelled to change their findings, except that you already did that, though.
Okay.
So we're going to trial. Quinny's, this claim survived a motion to dismiss from the city of Philadelphia in January of 2020. Every day, there's more information coming out about what happened to Ellen. There's more information coming out surrounding this story. It is tons of podcasts are covering it right now. We're going to get a trial. They're going to trial. We don't know when the trial is. And Ellen
wasn't supposed to happen at some point this year, but like this year.
I think it was. Yeah. So, something they withheld or they extended it or whatever.
Yeah. We don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to be. Since they filed this suit, Ellen's family's team has gotten their own forensic analysis done of Ellen's computer. Okay, so shout out to Kava. This Kava. Is a Kava-esque situation here right now. They found out that those searches for suicide, painless suicide, not even really searches at all. They're just autofill. So she could have been researching and looked like she was researching the side effects of the medication she was being put on, and they were prompting associated websites. We also have a deposition from another pathologist named Dr. Lindsay Emery, who was asked to examine Ellen's spinal cord by the chief medical examiner, second woman asked to examine the spinal cord. She testified that she remembered that at least one of the wounds had no hemorrhage, meaning that Ellen could have been dead when the spinal wound occurred. Now, she said that they use a lot of fluids in autopsy and it might have been washed away, but we do not know. So what's Sam been up to, Denise? He was married in 2014. He remarried. He has children.
His mother is Mindy Hankin Goldberg. Mm-hmm. Sam is Samuel Hankin Goldberg. His father is Richard Goldberg, and they were from Gladwin, Pennsylvania, which is like what I said earlier. That particular town in Pennsylvania is the sixth wealthiest city in the country. What did Richard Goldberg do, you ask? Well, Richard Goldberg, up until 2012, owned All-Star Shredding, which was a confidential document destruction and recycling company, Binnie's. He had a lot of money. His father was very wealthy. His father was successful, and his father knew a lot of people. He was very social, and he knew he had it in with a lot of very important, high up people. Mindy Hankin Goldberg, who I mentioned just a little bit ago, his mother, she was also a producer, and she produced TV and film.
So Sam's doing okay. Dr. Galino, the chief medical examiner for the city of Philadelphia, has since been removed from the medical examiner's office due to a fucking scandal that involved the mishandling of cremated remains. That and 1,000 over there. Just just really fantastic.
Stickers all around.
Like we said, we don't know when that trial will begin. We have to say there have been no charges against Sam Goldberg. He has never publicly commented on the case. He has never been charged. He has never been considered a suspect by the Philadelphia Police Department. This case is still technically a closed suicide case. The worst part about it for me is that we don't know anything about her identity.
Yeah.
We only know what was attached to her after she died. That has dictated, that presumption mm-hmm. has dictated the whole chain of events mm-hmm. for 10 years. I'm going to say that no stranger got into that condo building.
No.
And I'm going to say that she didn't kill herself.
I'm going to second that.
The crime scene is bizarre. I've seen people break those door latches before, and it's not heroic. They're just those stupid little, like, slide the bar over locks. Like, they're not fancy. It's not it's not something that you would lock, like, for any, like, you would lock it at night, like, when your other two locks were locked. It doesn't really serve anything on its own,
yeah.
Which I go back to that, because if I'm Ellen and I'm going to do something to myself and I want the door locked, that's the third lock in a series of three locks that I'm going to lock.
Do we know for a fact that that was in fact locked that way and he broke through with it in such a state?
All we know is that it was dislodged
from the wall,
from the door, in a position that would suggest that there was some impact. But we do not know. There's no footage of that. There's nothing to suggest that he really broke that door.
Right. Yeah, they don't have any cameras in the actual hallway. They have them in the stairway and they have them in the lobby or whatever, but they don't have them in the actual hall going into the apartments.
Very convenient. I'm not remotely convinced that he broke the door down. I heard, and I can't remember which episode it was. I know you had touched on it, Joss, that there were traces of the Klonopin and the Ambien in her system. I had heard that there was enough Ambien to suggest that she had taken it more recently than the night previous.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
But then when you think about it, the Ambien takes about 20 to 30 minutes to set in. And the amount that was found, she would have been too tired to have done the act. But it wasn't like from when she took it, she would have definitely, it already would have set in and she would, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like she just took it and hadn't set in yet. But like, why would you take an Ambien in the middle of the evening when you're like food prepping?
And in the middle of the afternoon, really.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. That's you know? Yeah.
There's a lot of discrepancies in the reporting though. There really is much of it.
The moving back home issues at work. Well, first off, do we think that the real issue was any real problem at work? Because we said before, she didn't want to talk about her possible issues or her relationship with Sam. She would always deflect, change the subject with the therapist, with the friend, whatever. So like, was she making more of a talking point out of having quote unquote issues at work when maybe there weren't even necessarily that many there to begin with? Classroom was on point. She had her curriculum set up.
Oh yeah.
She had everything set. And I heard also like that day in particular, there was a deadline for something and she met it and like
the grades.
Right.
So it was all done.
She wasn't behind. She wasn't,
no,
you know, struggling in that.
I think the only reason why they were in Philly was because that's where Ellen worked.
Mm-hmm.
Almost definitely, because I feel like if Ellen eliminates the job, there's no reason for her to be in Philly anymore. I mean, just looking at it, I'm like, she probably doesn't have to work.
Right.
To be honest with you, she really doesn't have to.
Right.
So like all the stresses with the job, it's like, well, she could probably very easily leave her job and they would be comfortable because he's very wealthy.
I think you make a great point though, Quinny, because you're right. Like if she was really stressing over him, it would make sense that she's going to go and like make the job seem like it was maybe more stressful and putting more of a toll on her when really it was him that was, putting the toll on her. Like,
yeah, it's making her stay there.
Right.
And like trying to move back home with her parents, you know, like,
I mean, I did that at 28.
The act of moving in is fine. Her saying, I want to move back home because I'm stressed about my job, when she has a perfectly successful fiance.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
No. Right.
The 911 call. I also heard that he called his family first.
I heard this too,
but wasn't sure if that was actually the case.
Yeah, like that.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, the 911 call is a load of bullshit. Mm. Is there a security camera in the gym?
Just the hallway to the gym, but his key fob, he does fob into the gym.
Is there another door in the gym too? That's what I want to know.
Is there an outdoor access?
Right.
Also, I would really, truly love to know two things. One, does he normally go to the gym at this time of day? Is that a usual thing?
I gotta say, it's a weird ass time to go to the gym.
It's really weird. Would love to chat with any of his ex-girlfriends. Was there a possibility that there was an affair? He was like meeting a girl at the gym. There's an affair she found out about in some way. I always just want to think affair because it happens so much.
I mean, people, like, this is what people fight about, right? It's money, infidelity, lack of sex that we see in these like violent situations.
Yeah.
They don't have to worry about money. They're engaged to be married. So and Ellen comes off as very much in love with him, at least when she's in his presence.
Right. Could she have been secretly pregnant? And we don't know because the medical examiner is an absolute
crock of shit.
At first I was like, okay, was there a life insurance policy? But he made more money than her. So like that really wouldn't. I have a real problem for some reason with this one little tidbit of the EMTs calling her time of death, because normally they're not supposed to call time of death unless it's due to natural causes. But for them to officially call time of death and get the ball rolling and all of the rest of the balls that rolled and the bullshit that happened after that.
Honestly, Carly, they were pissed to be there because it was a bad snowstorm. They all got called in. Nobody was supposed to be traveling. Everybody was pissed that they had to be there, and they cut corners hugely.
Yep. 100%.
And I really can't stand that. And last but not least, the freaking towel and the blood drip.
I know. You know, you remember the Christopher Porco case? Tried to kill his parents with an axe right here in Del Mar. Killed his father, and he tried to kill his mother, but she lived. And she still believes he didn't do it, which is just heartbreaking.
Oh my God.
His father was hit in the back of the head several times with an axe. Mm-hmm. And continued to do things. He didn't understand because of the way that he was hit in the head. And so he continued to, he like went and got the paper or something. He walked out on the front porch. He completed some activities before he died. And I just wonder if there was some involuntary movement from Ellen that made him, made whomever stab her over and over and over again. Like it was, there was an initial attack. And she started like flailing or causing or doing something that they didn't expect. And that's what causes like the intent.
Right. But both sides of her body, back and front, like that's
and
a
all
lot.
The bruising. The abdomen, and all the heart, bruising.
The bruising.
And the little shallow ones.
Yeah.
We see that in Crimes of Passion. I will never, ever get over "you better have an excuse."
Exactly.
I haven't heard that since I was in the fifth grade, sir. Mm-hmm. Like, I have not heard that since I was a wee child who came home too late. We can't fault Ellen. No one wants to talk about these things. Like, no one wants to bring this up to anyone because it's shameful. You know, when you have to tell someone that you're being abused, because it makes people feel like it's their fault.
100%.
Like, she still probably loves him and wants it to work out in some way.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my final thoughts are, who else could have done it? Crimes didn't even matter if the crime scene had anything, because it got cleaned up anyway. And it was just pure wonderful luck for him that that happened that way. And I'm sorry if there's a flip-flop at all between suicide and homicide. If you even for 1 second thought it could be a homicide, it's automatically a homicide.
Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office has launched internal investigations over fragmented autopsy reporting and over the misuse of remains of people's bodies without consent. Okay.
What is going on?
Yeah, Quinnies, get this. I don't want to get too much into it, but the early 1990s, the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office was harvesting the brains of more than 24 deceased people and sending them to the University of Pennsylvania. They were sending it to the Pennsylvania's medical school without familial consent. So they went under investigation. Now, 3 decades later, they're being investigated, bleeding back all the way from the 90s, because not only were they doing that, but they also, a medical examiner sent 26 human brains to a professor for study by his students. 36 unclaimed bodies to a school for funeral directors. They removed the eyes of several babies and toddlers. Most of them were abuse victims without the kin's consent. And they sent the organs to the West Philadelphia's Sky Eye Institute. Okay. And then not only that, there's multiple cases of fragmented autopsy reports because they can't actually comment on ongoing litigations. Like, they can't actually talk about actual lawsuits, but I found evidence online of 3 different lawsuits that are actually happening right now against the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office.
So there is a petition for Ellen's case to be reopened. That link will be in the show notes. There's a Justice for Ellen Facebook page. Look this case up. Just follow all of the things on all of the platforms. We'll keep you updated with the trial and anything like that. Keep Ellen Greenberg's name out there because I had never heard of her and I'm ashamed to say that. This is horrible. What's happened to her and her family. Completely unacceptable. Love you.
Love you.
Bye. Bye.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.